This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi, and I'm here with my co-hosts Justin Ozer and Brandon Shane Mutella. Brandon, how are you today?
Brandon's not my name.
Ugh.
Oh. Will you tell us your secret name?
You'd have to become his lover.
That's all right.
It'll remain a mystery. And
I think my husband might object to that.
My secret name is McLovin.
Nice.
I'm ready to give my heart to you guys.
Okay.
Very, very nice.
Well, Justin, how do you feel about that?
No further comment on that, but I'm doing pretty good, I think.
Well, good. Glad to hear that.
I have images flashing in my brain, but anyway, clear. They're cleared out. Okay, let's go.
You know, considering how you have not enjoyed the so generic relationship, I was surprised you went there, Brandon. I guess it was kind of obvious.
He still
though,
has a sense of humor.
I'm a complex individual.
Yes.
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 Aren't we all?
That's a good thing. All right. Well, today we are here to discuss Picard Episode 6, The Impossible Box.
The box. You opened it. We came. Now you must come with us. Taste our pleasure.
Okay.
Three people probably got that joke.
I don't know what you're referencing.
Sounds
actually.
Like.
I'm referencing okay. A movie starring the great Garrick, Andy Robinson, a movie called Hellraiser from 1987 or so.
Would you believe I actually, I'm like, is that from the Pinhead movie?
Yeah.
I didn't think Hellraiser. I've never seen it, but I was like, okay, boxes and movies.
You know.
Anyway.
We'll probably talk about it next time because we got a supplemental coming up. But like Hellraiser is one of those movies where it's like, it's crazy gory and stuff like this. But there's one thing in it that's like excruciating for me. And it's when they're moving a couch and a guy gets his hand like caught on a nail that's sticking out. Like all the gory stuff that's in the movie, like
that's that.
Like bonkers.
Because
bonkers,
that's
gory
the
stuff.
Thing that could actually happen to you if there was a nail.
That's what I was just about to say.
Wow. But yes, you heard right, listeners. We're going to have a supplemental, so look out for that.
Yes, we do have one coming, a short one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which for us would be the same length as other shows, so that's all
It'll
right.
be short. It'll only be 90 minutes. Yeah.
One commute instead of two. All right. Well, so now that we've gone through all that, let's talk about our general thoughts on the episode. Justin, general thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, this was my favorite episode so far of Picard Season 1. I just loved it through and through and everything that they were doing. So, I mean, that kind of summarizes my thoughts. My previous favorite, I think, was the first episode, Remembrance, but I think this surpassed that.
All right. Brandon.
I think this episode's really fantastic. There is a lot of really great stuff in it. We got a lot of momentum on all fronts of the plot. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you guys. There's some really fun stuff in here.
Yeah, it really did feel like this one was picking up speed and also kind of getting back to where it feels like it ought to be.
Well, you had the two parallel things that are all of a sudden kind of crashing into each other, which is what we've been waiting for. Yeah.
Yeah, so that makes it feel like it's more, I don't know, coherent.
And I did this thing with my hands like stapling together, but our listeners can't see that. But you guys can.
That's all right. They can envision it. Anyway, okay, so favorite moments. Go back to Brandon. What is your favorite moment in this episode?
As cheese and manipulative as it was when Picard's looking at his picture of Locutus there and they've got it all lined up. Oh, my goodness. Like, yes. It really did hit all the right notes, and I really love it. Even though the picture's backwards, I still truly love it. So,
you know, it's an impressionistic view of it, but the way that it lined up was just perfect. I love that.
Yeah, I loved it. It was a lot of fun. So, because the reason why, so when you're looking at it, right, it looks right, but we're technically looking through like a monitor that you can look through, right? So technically that red light should be on the other side, but if you do that, then he doesn't look like Locutus, right?
I mean, unless they have the technology that on both sides it faces you. There was actually something like that in Discovery.
On the reverse side, it was actually backwards.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was. Because anyway, they did show one reverse shot of it.
Okay.
It still looked really cool.
It sure did. For sure. Somebody was saying on it, they're like, oh, this is cheesy. And I'm like, I'm here for that kind of cheese. That's awesome.
I thought it was a great directing decision.
Yeah, it was perfect.
That was beautifully done. Justin, your favorite moment?
For me, it had to be Picard and Hugh meeting. We'll talk more about this, but just the way that that Hugh was happy to see him, they smiled and laughed and hugged. Like that was my favorite moment for sure. I really loved that a lot.
That was a wonderful moment. Yeah. Well, I have to go for the kind of strange, goofy moment when they were passing by those Borg in the hallway, and the one guy says, Locutus? And he kind of looks back at him.
You know
and
what? I missed that the first time and heard people talking about it. I'm like, I'm gonna make sure to check this out. And they're not only like passing through the hallway, I think like Hugh and Picard are like running through the hallway. Yeah. And all of a sudden, guy's like, Locutus? It's like, and it made me feel like, was that deliberate, or did the guy that was there just say that and they had to keep it in? Because it just felt like a really funny moment that unintentionally.
That would have been a fantastic ad lib. if that was beautiful.
I don't know. But yeah, I love that.
All right, so let's jump into our particular episode topics. And the first of those is the reunion of Picard and Hugh. So what did we think about that?
A lot of people seem to really like this, and a lot of people seem to put this as like a favorite moment on here. But, you know, I was like, I wasn't quite sure about this. Like, it's great that these characters have come together again, but I mean, looking back on it, Picard and Hugh never really spent a lot of time together. You know, like they had one conversation together in iBorg, and then I can't remember Descent that well, but if they did talk, it was right at the very end when they were wrapping everything up at the end of Descent Part 2. So, like, to me, it felt odd that they would have this emotional reunion after all of this, because when we saw Hugh in Descent, he was like upset with the Federation and upset with the Enterprise for what they did to him. You know, like I understand a lot of time has passed and he could be over it, but it didn't feel like the right note to me, but it really did seem to hit properly for a lot of people.
It's interesting that you say that, because as I was watching it, I wasn't really kind of thinking specifically of some of the past interactions and what they were like. I was thinking of Picard to Hugh as like a symbol of somebody freed from the collective who's been able to live a life outside, and as kind of like an inspirational figure in that way. And for these ex-Borg, like he's talking about in the episode, like they're the most hated people in the galaxy, and it's almost like they can't really go anywhere. So I saw it more in terms of that, and that Hugh was really happy to see him, because, you know, even though at the end of iBorg he had to return to the collective, it was Picard that was really helping out with the kind of first steps toward that freedom for him and for him to try to free others. So I saw it more as kind of like a symbol of who Picard was and what he did for Hugh's life.
But again, that was more Geordi that made him have those steps than was Picard.
Yeah, but Picard had to make the ultimate decision what to do. Right? Question comes in my mind now at this point is, does Hugh know that they're planning on using him as like a genocidal weapon? That would be an interesting thing to find out. but it's interesting that you have that perspective, because I had a completely different perspective like that Hugh was happy to see him because of kind of the symbolism of Picard and the big impact Picard had on his life because he was the ultimate decision maker.
But then, like, again, when we see that, you know, Picard, it could be that symbol to him, but, you know, Picard was only Locutus for like a couple of days at most. Like, I don't know how long Best of the Both Worlds takes place
it's
over.
It's not too long.
Yeah, it's not too long. But somebody like Seven was a Borg for decades.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Before, like, probably 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. 25 years, something maybe, like before, before she got taken out. Right? And so, I don't know. Like, it just... Yeah, like, I don't want to harp on it too much. It just felt odd, but because I know it meant a lot to a lot of people, right? So a lot of people thought it was just perfect. It just didn't strike that chord with me. So what did you think, Chrissy?
We find out that Hugh has become a citizen of the Federation. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of dropped there.
Yeah.
And so to me, the first thought I had was who sponsored him? Assuming you need to be sponsored and not just going by, you know, modern Earth type things. But it could have been Picard that sponsored him. Mm. It could have been Geordi, certainly. It could have been Data. It could have been all three of them. But I feel like Picard is the one to look to for that.
Yeah. But the other possibility is that Hugh is actually from a species that's part of the Federation. And so, and it's unclear. They never say, like, was he human? Was he another species? I don't think it's ever really said on screen. Maybe he was actually born on a Federation world and, you know, taken at some point and then kind of repatriated there because, I don't know. It feels like there should be more that we should find out about his background or what's happened in all this time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have like a little theory on that, but it does seem weird that he's the only Federation member, Federation citizen, and the rest of the XBs aren't. Mm-hmm. But it's got to be because he's the leader of this Borg reclamation project, right? That's like independent from the Romulans. Like he's in charge of it. They say it in the episode that this is separate from the Romulans and they had to let Picard come in because of the Federation diplomatic envoy credits that he got. And if they didn't allow him on the ship, he would be the Romulans would be risking an incident with the Federation. So maybe you have to be a Federation citizen in order to be working on these types of projects, whether it's the Borg ship or, you know, on Cardassia or wherever, like, you have to be a Federation member. So, therefore, they've made him a Federation citizen so that he can be in charge of this project.
That could be. Or he was a citizen before, and so he was the one that was available. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what I really like about the scenes that they have together is, like, Hugh's, like, kind of taking him on a tour of, like, here's what's going on with this reclamation project. And earlier in the episode, I know we've jumped to the part with Picard and Hugh first, but earlier in the episode, you know, they're talking about the Borg, like on the bridge of La Sirena, and Picard seems really, that he doesn't believe that the Borg could actually really change. But in the course of what he sees with Hugh and what's going on with this, he becomes kind of more convinced that underneath it all, they're just victims. I mean, which Picard should understand anyway, because he's a victim himself, but and that they're not monsters. So I just kind of like the back and forth that they have. And I also, one thing I have to point out in these scenes that I really liked was that at one point, Picard is mentioning Soji and, you know, oh, why do you think that, that she's in trouble? Because Hugh mentions that and he says, you know, it's a hunch, something about her and something about the dashing Romulan spy who showed up 2 weeks ago, pretending not to be asking questions about her. Like, Hugh knows exactly what's going on with Narek, it feels like, which I like. Like, he's not just unaware of this other stuff that's going on. So I thought there were a lot of like really great scenes between them and to kind of build out more who Hugh is in this time.
I'm glad you brought up the thing about Picard saying the Borg never change, because arguably the Borg haven't changed. These people are not Borg anymore. And so that's a completely different thing.
Yeah, and we don't necessarily, I mean, there's a reference later in the episode that I'm sure we'll talk about that seems to say that the Borg have expanded in some directions, but we don't really know their current state, and we probably won't see that on this show. But yeah, it's been severed from the collective. It's not really part of the Borg. It's something different now. right?
Yeah, I think he'd be, Picard would be in a lot rougher shape if there were actually Borg on that ship, as opposed to people who used to be Borg. Yeah.
That's an interesting thing that you said, Justin, about like how, where, what is the state of the Borg right now? Because watching this show, I've got in my head the Destiny trilogy. Right.
Oh, yes.
So like it's really hard for me to get that out of my head while I'm watching the show, even, you know, so for those of you that know what happened in that book, you know, like you should go read them because they're amazing. They're amazing novels, but I don't know. So
I wouldn't.
Yeah. I'll keep it vague at that.
It's very, it's very different than what's happening here.
That's right. Yeah. But that the goal of that trilogy, it feels like a perfect backstory still for what we're watching here. But yeah, that line that he says, so again, like, so that felt really weird to me, and I'm having a tough time coming to terms reconciling those two attitudes of Picard's. The anger, where he's like, changed the Borg, they coolly assimilate entire civilizations, entire systems in a matter of hours. They don't change, they metastasize. And then his calm answer later, where he's like, oh, you're showing that they're victims.
Once they're freed from the collective, but I think when they're part of the collective, I mean, it's kind of like he does feel, I guess, that that part of it hasn't changed, but once they're free from it, he can see them as something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's a, that's a good way to look at it. That'd probably be the best way to look at it, is the Borg themselves and then the XBs. So that works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2 weeks, that's a very, I think that's an important point for like to, you know, get a gauge for how long things have been going on here.
Yeah, to 2 weeks stretching over, I don't know, 6 episodes. That's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I just like that, and of course you got so much more of Hugh in this episode, and I just really love how Jonathan Del Arco is playing him, because I mean, it is a contrast to, I mean, of course, when you see him in Iborg, first of all, he's just like severed from the collective, he's scared, and then he just kind of like gradually adjusts and is talking to them and feeling more individual. And then, as you mentioned, Brennan, in Descent, like he's kind of angry at what's happened with Lore taking over this section of Borg and all the experiments he's doing and all of that. And it does feel to me like kind of a more mature character that's been through a lot of things. It felt like a lot of times, you know, Hugh and TNG was very young and had very little experience and was just kind of like flying by the seat of his pants for all this stuff.
He was. But
he's definitely gained some more experience and kind of has more of an idea of how to do things. And I just like how Jonathan Del Arco played him, which was, I think, fairly different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He tweeted today, and that was really cool. I'll find it here. Oh, okay. So he says, the hug is not, excuse me. The hug was not in the script. At Sir Pat Stew suggested we should have some kind of greeting. I said, I'd like to hug you if that's okay. I kept thinking of my dad who's been gone for 17 years and what I would do if he were standing in front of me.
So almost like he's thinking of him like a father figure as well, as Jonathan Del Arco in real life feeling that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just, that was really sweet. I read that before I watched it again, and you can kind of see it in his face. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, that was very cool. So, and I think too, there's stuff that happened between Descent and this.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And right at the end of Descent, you know, did the Enterprise hang around for a while to make sure that they were, you know, able to kind of get up on their feet? And who owned that planet before? They just showed up there and built the building, and Lore was experimenting with people. So they may have had to pick them up and move them, set them up somewhere else. So there could be a lot of interaction that we don't know about.
It's a good question. If I remember right, I think there was a novelization of that episode. I haven't read it yet, but maybe that could provide more.
I think
more.
There is, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a... Yeah, it's a lot of time that's passed. I think it's... by the time you get to Descent Part 2, it's like 28 years between then and this point. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. That's like most of Hugh's life, probably.
Yeah. I thought it was very interesting that we take the Borg, who are arguably one of the scariest baddies in the Star Trek canon, okay, and all of a sudden they're victims, okay. And when you really think about it, it's like the initial, however the Borg came to be, and we'll talk about Destiny later, but however the Borg came to be, it's like that was the initial evil, for lack of a better term. And then everything else just kind of got dragged in. You know, you don't see a lot of people who are going out and trying to be assimilated. I think there's some. I can't remember if it's in the books or in Voyager, though. But yeah, that's a rarity.
For sure. I mean, I think that, like, as viewers of Star Trek, I think we've been kind of trained to see them a bit more as victims ever since Iborg, really. That's the first time where it's like somebody's free from the collective and you can see them as more than just part of the collective and just, you know, going around ruthlessly assimilating people. So, I mean, I think it's not necessarily it's all of a sudden, but it is something that on this scale we haven't seen before. I mean, Picard even says, like, I can't believe you can kind of unassimilate people on a scale like this. This is really something. So, but yeah, I think it's very interesting. But so the thing that I noticed that this is more like a question, when Hugh says, we remain the most hated people in the galaxy, just as helpless and enslaved as before. And then he whispers, only now our queen is a Romulan. I'm like, who's that a reference to? Exactly.
Sela.
Maybe.
That's what I was going to talk about. Like, that's what I'm saying. It's got to be Sela.
Talk about Sela. See, for a second, I was like,
how many women Romulans do we know? Like, other Nerissa's than like the original on the cube, one,
but right? I don't know.
So we know a couple from like the season 2-1 from Contagion, and then she also showed up in when Troy's the Tal Shiar, right? We got Adrienne Barbeau's character from DS9, but I think she died, didn't she?
I don't remember.
I don't know which one that is, but and there's
from Inter Armas Enum Silent Legis.
Oh yeah, yeah. I know who you mean.
She died. It's got to be Sela.
I'm not so sure about that. I'm really not so sure. At first, I was like, "What female Romulans have we seen on the cube?" There's Nerissa. I don't know if that makes sense. There's Ramda. I don't know if that makes sense. It was just a question in my mind what that meant, and I hadn't gone there and thought about Sela. So you're thinking it's like somebody that's like sponsoring this whole thing the Romulans are doing in some way, or?
Well, it's she'll be Jad Vash, right? So like they're manipulating behind the scenes. She's in charge of O. She's in charge of Nerissa.
And Hugh knows all this.
Yeah, that's my thought process. You may not know that like Nerissa and O are involved, but he could just report directly to Sela, or whoever this woman ends up being, right?
Well, we'll find out. That is interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that both of you took that as an individual, because the way I read that was our queen as a Romulan, as in the person who's directing what's
whoever
going on.
Whoever is directing and instead of the Borg queen directing the collective. Oh, I could see
it's
that.
It's the Romulans in general, you know, and he's just
But why would he whisper it? Picard knows the Romulans run this thing. Whispering it makes it seem like it's something like you shouldn't talk about, but
and he says Romulan.
True. Yeah. We'll find out.
Well, yeah, but that could be the head of the Romulan Senate. You know, that doesn't necessarily have to be.
We'll see.
You know. Or is the state as a female. States are often referred to as female, so.
Oh yes, the motherland.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
If we see Sela, point to you, Brandon.
Yeah. All right, so on to our next topic here, which is the friendship of Raffi and Rios. Yeah. They seem quite close, and yet they don't seem to know a lot about each other.
Well, there's certain things that they don't know. I mean, you could actually know someone for a long time and not know if they have children, I think. But
that's true.
But I thought this, well, there were a couple of things like leading to this. So, you know, they have to get to the cube, and it's like, how do we do that? Oh, we need to get Picard some diplomatic credentials, right? And then, you know, Raffi's been through this whole thing with her son. She's having a terrible time. They kind of like just dragged onto the bridge and she's, you know, drinking and not having a good time. And they're just kind of like, having her do this thing where she has to like put on her best face and basically force this captain that's in Starfleet to grant these credentials. This is a really striking scene also because, yeah. I mean, she's doing this thing and she's basically losing this friend. And then Picard, and this is another flaw I think he has, he just like kind of claps. And it's like, oh, that is not a moment to clap.
Good job. That
because, yeah. Oh, man.
That is what Chrissy's like, I look forward to it. So that's what I want to talk about. I'm like, what is up with this dude? Okay. Like the fact that he applauds her after that, he's just oblivious.
He's very much focused on what he needs for this mission. And he's not as much focused on what's happening to some of the people around him is what it feels like. Because yeah, even definitely. When other, but like, and you see like Girardi and Elnor giving this look like, that's not so good what happened, and you know, Ries has to comfort her and take her back, which we'll talk about that scene. But like Picard, and it was a really interesting choice because the show is called Picard and it's kind of like a focus on him, and that became like really clear to me when you know he was clapping and like it was clear that like, you know, if he was aware of things he'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, that. But he doesn't do that. Instead, he just kind of like sits back in the chair and he like gives like this sigh of relief. And then you hear the notes of like the TNG theme. Mm-hmm. Like this is a heroic moment. I thought it was like such a like interesting thing that they're doing, because we pointed out at different points when we've talked about the episode. Like Picard is doing things that maybe he wouldn't have done in the past, or that aren't really sensitive to the people around him. He's kind of like selfishly pushing toward the mission of what he wants, sometimes at the expense of other people. Mm-hmm. And that's like, it's hard to see, but it's also really interesting to see that, and that they're making those choices.
See, I forgot to mention at the end of the last episode, but when they talk about the stowaway and he goes and knocks on the door and she says, leave me alone. And he smiles.
And he smiles and he's like, oh, she's back. I'm just going to leave now instead of, I don't know. And like, you know, I think one of the reasons I wanted to put on the outline the friendship of Raffi and Rios is like the contrast, right? That with Picard doing this, not really being sensitive, not really checking up on her, and like Rios kind of being like, okay, let me just take you back to your quarters. And then I think like he's really there as a close friend, and they're holding hands like in a very friendly way, and just like he's really comforting her and trying to you know, at least be sensitive to what's going on with this person. Yeah. So I thought that was a really interesting contrast, and it was a way of showing you that they have a certain depth of friendship and they've known each other for some years. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a really great scene and a great kind of contrast to how Picard deals with things.
Yeah, it's interesting. The first thing I thought of, because she goes so quickly from kind of incoherent to normal-ish and then back to incoherent, that's just a high functioning high functioning alcoholic or addict or both in her case. And how much experience does Picard have with something like that, you think? You know, he doesn't realize he's got no template to see that this is what's going on.
That's true. Like but like I don't have, you know, any experience really dealing with someone personally like that. But if I saw that someone was going through that, I would at least say like, Raffi, I know that was really difficult for you, but you know, thank you so much for doing that. I really appreciate it. Is there anything I can do for you? Right. Just like a basic human thing. Like I see that was really hard for you. And he doesn't even like thank her for it. It's just like this awkward applause when it's not something to applaud, because it took a lot out of her and she's having a really tough time. So that would seem
you don't thank your office.
Go ahead.
You don't thank your officers for doing their job.
But she's not an officer.
Yeah,
but that's how he's looking at this whole thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but see, if in TNG, like one of his officers was having like a big addiction problem or something, you think he would just like take them aside and be like, "Hey, I know you're having a real hard time. Let me get you some counseling." Well, whatever, right? Like, I don't know if he would just. Maybe season one Picard, but maybe after that he wouldn't just be like, suck it up and, you know, I don't know. There's just something about it that felt wrong. But at the same time, you're right. He is in a different situation as a civilian. He also has some kind of potential illness going on that we don't know if how it's maybe affecting his mental functioning. So, and he's so single-minded on this mission.
When he pulls that necklace out of his pocket, did you see his hands shaking?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yes.
Yeah, like before he beams down, he pulls the necklace out and his hands are shaking, right? And that, it's not like out of fear or anything like that. Like that's some kind of palsy, I think is the word, right?
Yes, interesting.
Palsy. Interesting. I totally missed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I picked up on that.
Quick, like something that you said there, Justin, like I'm not sure. I don't know how they're playing this yet in this show. Like I don't know if we're seeing something that they're not intending us to see because, you know, with the tone of the music being so, you know, like they're doing the TNG theme and the tone of the music felt a little bit off because it was a little bit too jolly for too long in that conversation between Raffi and Emmy, right? Like, I think at some point there, the music should have turned darker to show the seriousness of the situation, but they kept the music light for that whole conversation. So I'm not sure that the writers are intending us to interpret his actions the way that we're interpreting them. You know?
I think at the very least, their intention is to interpret Picard as flawed in some way. The specifics of that, what I really like is that you're not quite sure, like, what the intention is. Like, I think in TNG, it was clear, like, Picard's the captain, model Starfleet officer, our hero. We know he's always going to have the best interest at heart. But, like, in this, there's a couple of, like, different things that are going on. Like, he feels like he made this big mistake. People are telling him that, you know, he gave up and left them behind. He's very single-minded about this mission, thinks he needs to save a life or different lives or whatever is going on. He's a civilian, so it's different. I mean, at plus, you know, he has this potential mental problem, right? Like, so I think there's all of these things that are going on that are combining to make it so that in any one moment, it's really hard to tell, like, what is going on with him. And I actually find that really interesting that you're not sure. That it's not clear.
Yeah. We're once the season's done, we're going to have to look back on it and see how the seeds have been laid. And I hope that they're going to play it the way that we're seeing it, because if we're seeing something that they're not intending, then I'm going to have a big problem with this season when it's done, you know? Yeah, so
I agree. The amount of effort the writers and the directors and producers and everybody have put into the tone and how everything is happening on the show to have something that serious
be played that light.
Yeah, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I was almost thinking about it in terms I guess I hadn't thought about it too much, but you know, by playing the TNG, I didn't actually notice the music much, like, during the conversation. I noticed it more when Picard gives a sigh of relief and it's like this, da 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 da, like this really kind of like, you know, heroic big theme that you have from TNG. The way that I took that is that's how Picard feels about that moment. But that isn't necessarily how we should feel about it, because I felt quite different from that. So it almost feels like in some parts of it, the music reflects how Picard is feeling, but not necessarily how, like, as a viewer, you might feel about it or objectively, like, what is going on. That's the best way that I can think about it. But we'll just have to assess once we see the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Because, like, the purpose of music in a movie is to, like, it is designed to manipulate you into helping you understand how you're supposed to be interpreting the scene, right? Like, there are videos out there where it's like literally just a reaction shot of a person. And depending on the type of, like, you can go to YouTube and see this, depending on, and they play the scene over and over with different types of music.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a completely different, no acting has changed. It's the same video clip every time you watch it.
Right.
But because of the music, you feel a completely different way and you feel different motivations of the characters as you're watching that clip. That's why I love my, that's why I did the melodic tracks. Like, I love music because of what it can do and, you know, what, the, what, how music can change a scene completely, you know?
I guess what I'm saying is maybe what they're doing isn't to try to make manipulate you a certain way on the scene, but make you understand what Picard is feeling in that moment.
Right.
Which I think is quite a different use than you usually see.
Yeah. Like, right? I couldn't think of another example. I can't it's think of one unusual. Off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So, where they would do that in a film or a TV show where it's like, we're going to play this type of music, but you're not supposed to feel that way. You're supposed to, that's how he feels, but not how you're supposed to feel.
Yeah. And
I just couldn't think of it. If listeners can think of one.
I can't think of one off the top of my head, but that's why it was so striking to me, because there was a dissonance between what the music was doing and how I was really thinking about it. And I actually liked that, because that was like so, that stood out as like so different than what you usually see. But anyway.
Yeah. He's looking at it as this, you know, small victory that's going to push him along this, you know, mission that he's conducting.
He's almost looking at it like a set of like tasks to accomplish. Like, okay, we'll pick up this person, then we'll go to the cube, and then we'll pick up Soji, and then we'll, you know, like, but he's not thinking about it like, okay, when we go here, this is going to affect, you know, XYZ person in this way. He's kind of thinking of it as a series of tasks almost, right?
When you said that, the only thing I could think of was that the scene from Shaun of the Dead. We'll take the car, get Mom, kill Phil, go to the Winchester, and wait for this whole thing to blow over. Oh, I'm missing. Get it, Liz, in there. Have you seen Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah, I haven't. I've heard of it.
Yes. Oh, my God. You have to watch it. It has some bloody moments, but it's funny bloody, like Monty Python.
Second
so
week in a row,
really...
you're recommending something with violence and funny.
Justin?
Yeah, it is. All right.
Justin, it's not that good.
Okay.
All right. We'll have that conversation another time. But okay, so try to lighten the mood there. All right. Right. Before we step away, not Raffi and Rios, but I just want to touch on Girardi. I keep putting an extra R in her name. Girardi. That was weird, right?
I don't think it was that weird, actually. You mean the scene with her and Rios?
Yeah.
Why do you think it's weird? Let me ask that question.
She didn't strike me as somebody who would just be like, hey, you're cute and playing football in your ship. Let's go to the bedroom. You know, she just didn't strike me that way. So maybe it's just how I'm interpreting her character, but...
I mean...
And then she's lying to Picard's face, which I guess we expect, but still.
I don't know. I like with Girardi and Rios, I saw it as something where... She's looking for something that's a distraction, right?
From
what she's feeling. And that can be a very human thing to do. I mean, not that I've ever been like, hey, you know, I just murdered an ex-lover, let's go to bed. I mean, when you put it in those terms, it seems bizarre. But like I think it can be a very human motivation, and that felt like it could happen. So it didn't actually strike me as that odd. I think it's not necessary, at least yet, but it didn't strike me as odd. It just felt like one of those things, like they didn't necessarily have to have that in there.
Yeah, that's true. It's probably leading up to something else.
Yeah,
you would think so.
I didn't mind it either, because it like Justin said, it felt like a very human moment, because she's sitting there, she's like, you know, I'm not doing good, and he even asks her, he's like, are you sure you want to do this, is this going to help? And she's maybe for a couple of hours. You know, like, so like she's going into it knowing exactly what it is, not expecting any commitments or whatever. Right. So, so that's why I didn't have a problem with it. Yeah. And, you know, she's like, I can sense mistakes when I'm doing them. Like she's like joking and stuff. But yeah, I didn't have a problem with it myself. So
I didn't really have a problem with it. I just was kind of like that. I feel like there's a missing piece of information. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel
or
like
maybe I'm trying to read too much.
It's put
into
in
it.
There for something. Like, and we should acknowledge this is the longest episode we've had so far at 54 minutes. So it's not like they needed to like pad time. Like they were just it's there for some reason going forward. I just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
See, but like this isn't my favorite episode of the season yet, but I really loved it because, you know, it is longer.
Yeah.
And we have a moment like this where it's just characters. Yes. This is what I want.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. There was much more character building than we've seen in some of the episodes last couple of weeks.
This is what I want in this show.
Yeah.
You know, I want characters. I want people talking to each other, right? I want people to get to know these characters because we only have them for 10 minutes. I wish that we would have these characters flushed out more. What did I say?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Okay. Well, same thing, basically.
It feels like 10 minutes.
Feels like 10 minutes. 10 episodes. I want to get to know them. We need to flush these episodes out so that we can get to know these characters.
I think we've gotten to know these characters a lot more than the first 6 episodes of any other Star Trek series.
Not all of them. But again, the television is done differently, right? So yes, we know these characters. We know a ton about Raffi, but we don't get a lot of moments. Like what I think it was the last episode was my favorite moment was Rios and Raffi sitting there talking.
Yep.
Right? None of that was necessary.
True.
None of it. Right? It doesn't matter if we know that Rios forgot that he was Locutus. It's completely irrelevant to this 10-episode arc.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I love those moments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I really love in television right now, are these moments where characters sit down and chat and spend time together. I love that stuff.
It's more like a novel.
Yeah.
Because they're not concerned with the amount of time. You know, you can have a novel that's 1,000 pages.
Yeah, and you can have a novel where there's a conversation that goes on for, you know, 20 pages or something, right? Can totally have that.
And they can be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So this doesn't spoil anything about next week's episode, but according to IMDb, if they're right, the next week's episode is even longer, 58 minutes. So hopefully there'll be more of those kind of moments.
Yeah, that's confirmed. I know somebody who has screener access and they've said it's that long.
So, anything else we want to talk about life on the La Serena?
I have a couple other things here. So,
please, yeah.
So, I wanted to point out the humorous moments with Raffi. Okay, so I like comedy, and the stuff with Raffi when she's talking with Emmy is solid gold. Okay, when she's like, you know, Picard, he's all ego and rampaging id. Like, that is brilliant, right? Beautiful. And she gives him a side look. And then she's like, Picard is so Federation, his face is probably still on the damn brochures, right?
That
like,
was great, too.
This is solid gold writing, right? And I wanted to point that out. And maybe it's because I love Raffi so much as a character, but Elnor's not doing it for me, and his lines are really not working for me as a contrast. No. In-butt and out-butt, like, he knows just enough about humanity to be wrong on his terms, right? And it's not working for me. But also, like, so because he has absolute candor, he's a telepath like Troy now?
What are you because saying?
Where'd you get that?
So with that one look that after they've slept together, after Girardi and Rios sleep together, they just give each other a look, right? And he's like, the obvious tension between you two makes me uneasy. There's no tension in that look. Right? Like, it's so subtle.
That didn't bother me. I thought, you know, maybe he's not reading minds, but, you know, maybe he's
also when Girardi's sitting there and he's like, oh, he can't sense the tension in you. Like, I understand he's not really a telepath, right? I'm not trying to say that he's really a telepath.
But it's like, cues.
He's picking up these cues that he just picks up these cues because he has absolute candor. Because I'm honest with you, I can suddenly sense.
In the co-op.
I don't know. Like,
Okay, so let's talk about this for a little bit. So you started talking about Raffi. I agree. Her comedy is great. But like for Elnor, I think we talked about this last week. I didn't like either that he was mostly there for comic relief, but I thought it was a big step forward for his character because this week it wasn't about comic relief. It was more about his role, especially at the end in defending Picard. And I really like the character. I think we haven't seen enough of him, but like the stuff he was saying, it worked for me. It was fine. Like I didn't have a problem like you did with him in this episode. Yeah,
I don't know. Chrissy?
Remember Data in The Naked Now. Prick me and do I not bleak? You know, it's we may look back on this later and go, oh, so they were doing this with him then, but then he turned out to be a very well fleshed out character.
I think it's fine. I think he needs to be I think he needs to be fleshed out more, but I like Elnor. I think he's good.
And as for his ability to see what's going on, if you think about the training involved in hand-to-hand combat, you have to be able to see every possible tell in somebody. So that could carry over to just looking at people and being like, oh, their relationship has changed, and I'm not sure how.
But also, if you're someone that believes in truthfulness, I would think that all the Coat Milot actually get training in how to tell just from like subtle body language and facial expressions what someone is really, what's really going on with them, or if they're telling the truth or not. So, I mean, that works for me fine. He got some training in how to do that. I mean, I don't know.
Well, it really didn't bother me. Except for in the last episode, after like 5 minutes of them talking about it, he's like, oh, you guys are lying. I get it. Right. So, like, they're not trained to determine that people are lying.
Well, but that was in the context of creating these fictional personas to go down to the ridiculous planet.
As opposed to like a regular interaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he'd not ever been introduced to play acting or fiction. Well, he'd been introduced to fiction because Picard introduced him to fiction, but the concept of acting.
It's not working for you. It's working for me.
That's all right.
What can I say?
We'll see where it goes.
One line that I thought was really interesting about this that I haven't seen too many people calling out is when Jurati is relieved that she doesn't have to go to the Borg cube. Right.
Yes. I noticed that.
I think that ties back to what O probably showed her.
I think she's relieved because she feels like if she had to go to the cube, she'd need to, extract information or ensure that Soji dies or so. I don't know. Like, I wasn't sure in that moment, but I saw that she was relieved and I was like, okay, how does that relate to it?
Yeah.
Not sure.
I don't know if you really need to read into that beyond these are Borg. And yes, I know they're ex-Borg. We just talked about that. But
Murdered last week. Good thing I won't have to this week. You know, I don't want to make too much light of it, but it's just like, I'm relieved I don't have to like take an action I don't want to right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Or it could just be scary to go on something that was Borg. I mean, think about how the Borg are perceived within the Federation. Mm-hmm. And obviously she's studied them. She said as much.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have great intimate knowledge of this, then you don't necessarily want to walk into it.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, I guess on top of that too, just one other little thing. I'm really confused as to like why, you know, like it wasn't even mentioned or anything. And I know that we don't have to be told everything, but the fact that this person died and they're not like, did the EMH not come by? Like, they didn't even ask about the EMH because she shut down the EMH. The EMH knows that he got shut down by her in the middle of the death. Like,
I think it would have been good to have just like one short scene where they bring the EMH back online to ask him and he doesn't know anything about it. And then you imply from that she like wiped that part of his memory or something like that. But I do wonder if that'll come back later. But Picard tends to be really accepting. He's like, you appeared on my chateau with, you know, a disruptor out of nowhere. It's cool. Let's go along with it. So Maddox died and you said that it was because of this and that. It's good enough for me. I mean, sometimes there are these scenes where Picard feels very like trusting, almost maybe it's almost like a flaw, like because he's just so single-minded about these things. He's like, let's get to the next thing. Let's get to the next thing. Let's get to the next thing. Like, he doesn't, almost seems like sometimes he doesn't want to delve too much into what's going on, but to reach his goal, you know, he's very single-minded.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't have any answers for it. I wish that even if they would have had a line where he's like, did the EMH help? And she's like, no, it was too quick. So even if just a line, even if she was lying just a bit more, I would have been okay with just some type of acknowledgement. I know we don't need to be told everything, but I would have liked to have seen.
See that.
Did we get on the show that she's an MD, or is that only in the book?
I think it's only specifically acknowledged in the book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that, again, that's a place where we're missing information if you haven't read the book, but we'll talk about that
in a supplemental coming up.
All right, so let's talk about Soji and Narek and all of that wonderful Romulan synth love affair.
Okay, I'll talk about it first. So, this is something that I think when it was first introduced to Soji and Eric, I was like, I'm not so sure. And I've said on previous episodes, like I was getting more into it. I feel like they really were able to build on that to just like really move along that story. And I did feel like it really worked. And this was an episode where you really got to know, I think, more about who Soji is, which I really liked because I loved who Daj was in like the first episode. And I was like, oh, she died. And then there's Soji and like the way that you relate to her is through this love affair with this manipulative Romulan guy. But this was more about her trying to discover things about herself. I really like those scenes. And I like that Narek was kind of pushing things along and actually getting to the point where things like get to a head. So it really worked for me. And I'm sure we'll talk about a bunch of stuff that happened in here. But overall, I think it worked for me.
Yeah, you mentioned I'm really, really starting to think Daj is dead now.
Although
probably.
I do have a theory about what might be going on. But we'll talk about that when we talk more about Soji's dream flashback false memory thing. So,
okay.
But yeah, like, what did you think of it overall? I know that Soji and Eric hasn't been your favorite thing.
I'll let Christy go first on this. So I got, I think I'll surprise you.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it pushed forward. It seemed like the entirety of their relationship, his manipulation of her, just led up to this point, which I guess is exactly what it was. But then he's all sad at the end, so we know that he's maybe having a change of heart or something, so he's might turn out to be a good guy after all, or that kind of thing. And I kind of hope they don't go there, because that's too predictable. And I know, Brandon, you were tweeting about that, too. Yeah. So,
There's a lot of great stuff in this portion of it, and we get a lot of advancement on this story, which is good. Okay, because we had three episodes with some story exposure, some story, story building that wasn't very effective very well, in my opinion. But then we had a week off, and now we've got a lot. We got a lot of information. You know, she's on the edge of activating, like she's not quite activated, I don't think. Maybe she's like, I guess I don't quite understand the term, like, because when Daj was getting attacked, she's activated, and they said that she's activated.
I think activated means having access to like android abilities that go beyond human abilities in terms of speed and strength and hearing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So then that's what's going on here. So she's basically in the same spot that we saw Daj at the beginning of the first episode.
Yep.
Right. So she's there. And so it's great, and we got a lot of callbacks. Like she had like the same lines, like, do you know me? Like that's what, Daj said that as well. So I like that stuff a lot. I am having trouble with Narek and her, as I have for the last few episodes, because like Narek, they're playing this that Narek clearly doesn't want to be doing what he's doing.
Yes.
Right. And so like, The guy's a scuzzball, because of what he's doing.
And
he's manipulating her, and he's trying to get stuff out of her. But we're supposed to believe this love story, and like the way that stuff is written, I am fully expecting him to come back and save the day and save her, right? At some point, because he loves her and he can't give her up. He can't give her up. His sister, he'll have to kill his sister at some point. Right, so that he can be with her at the end of the season. I'm like, I just don't want to see that, because I just don't buy this love story.
I think it's going in a different direction, actually.
So I would love to hear your theory, because I pray to God that I'm wrong, because I don't want to see that.
No, I mean, I've been thinking about this. Where is it going to go? Because, and we'll talk more about the end, but basically, like, he's on the cube and Soji's not. She's somewhere else with Picard, right? So it's separated, right? But, I mean, it does feel like at some point that it'll meet up again in some way, but I don't think it'll be for him to save the day. I think like in some way it'll be for him, Well, maybe that is still saving the day if he sacrifices himself. I don't know. I don't have like a really coherent theory about it, but I do feel like it's going somewhere that may be surprising. And we'll see if I'm wrong, but
I hope you're right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've never wanted to be more wrong in my life. So, okay. You know, because right now, what I want to see happen is I want Soji to do to Narek what Worf did to Weyoun 7.
Just want to snap his neck, huh?
Yeah. She's got the strength. She could do it.
I don't
want
to see
And
that.
I want Damar there laughing when it happens.
Of course.
That scene, yeah.
So, anyways.
So it sounds like what you're really saying, Brandon, is like the stuff with Soji was working for you. You're looking forward to seeing where her story goes, but you don't like as much what's happened with Narek or how you think it'll come back around.
I would rather have not seen the tear and him just be like, no, she's an android. I hate her. Because then I could believe and I'd be like, perfect. That's why this relationship has been total trash for 4 episodes is because he's literally been faking it for 4 episodes. That would have made me happy. So, because I'm just not buying that he's sad about this now. I don't know. So,
I buy that he's sad about it, but I will be interested to see where it goes.
I think he is sad about it. I think this is maybe the first time that he's had an opportunity to be in a relationship that's not manipulative.
That's
like
not incestuous.
Sister. And that too. Yeah.
Here's an interesting thing. You know, maybe. I think on the official Picard podcast, they had an interview with, I think it was Akiva Goldsman, who's the executive producer. And apparently they were planning on making it more explicitly incestuous. They had dialed it back. And this is the dialed back part. But anyway, so yeah, that whole thing
should
is
have kept
weird.
Dialing.
but like, I think one of the things that I really kind of liked was the way you were seeing for Soji figuring out like all this stuff she has is only like 3 years old, right? And it and just putting yourself in that moment of like, what if you found out that everything you thought you knew about yourself wasn't true? And so I was just like getting really like a lot more into that. And people have asked the question like, so why didn't when they got that information, Narek just pull out a disruptor and kill her, right? Like, why have this thing where she could escape? And it seems like it's because he doesn't really want to kill her. He actually wants her to escape. Seems like, but I don't know.
I think they missed something. They missed a small moment that would have been a super powerful moment. Hmm. When she's scanning all of that stuff, the last thing she did, she should have turned that scanner on herself.
Yes. I expected her to do that too.
I didn't even think that
would have been powerful. Approximate age, 37 months. That would have been like, whoa. So I don't know. I think they missed something there, but
I don't know. I didn't even think about that the first 2 times until somebody mentioned it. I'm like, that would have been interesting, but maybe to just be too afraid to even do that and is hoping for a different explanation. I think she's hoping for the explanation like, false memories have been implanted. They've given me false possessions, but I myself am not like 3 years old, but
yeah.
But anyway, there was a lot that was going on and, you know, this thing that was on the cube, Soji's kind of moved off of it. So I did want to point out one thing that I don't know if you guys noticed. I only noticed it because of the closed captioning. And I just thought like, is that planet in there for something or just like some gibberish we're not supposed to care about? So, when Picard and Hugh go to Soji's quarters, there's an announcement in the background.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I wrote down here what it says. Sectors 5-8 through 5-21 and all over-the-moon sectors are temporarily closed due to detected chronometric activity. If you have entered any of the affiliated sectors in the past 48 hours, please proceed to, and then the doors close and you can't hear the rest of it. But, right, chronometric activity, time travel activity, like, what does that mean?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, too.
Yeah. And it's totally like so low that if you're not watching the closed captioning, you don't even, can't even make it out really. Right. But yeah. So we haven't had any time travel in this show yet.
I got another interesting closed captioning to bring up later.
Okay.
Okay. The fact that this one was included in the closed captioning says to me that it's important somewhere along the line, because otherwise it just would have said computer voice and background or something like that.
Yeah.
If anything at all.
Seems like something's going on there, but.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, this guy just goes into some predictions, but, you know, when she finally is able to see what's going on in this like implanted dream memory flashback thing. Mm-hmm. and Soji sees like her father's face, like all blurry. I mean, of course, mm-hmm. that made me think like, oh, father isn't really Maddox. Who is it? What's going on with this? Did you guys feel the same way?
Yep. Yeah. Definitely going to be another surprise reveal as to who this person is.
And it made me think.
No, I didn't go there. Okay.
You didn't go there? Like
No.
And I only really thought about it on a rewatch, but then I was thinking like, we know a couple of things. There's Dodge, there's Soji, and there's a nest of androids somewhere, right? And it just made me think like, Maddox is talking about Dodge and Soji. Is that a different Dodge and Soji than the ones that we've actually been following who are created by someone else that also has this nest or something like that?
Well, no, he said the one was on Earth and one was on the artifact.
Yeah, that's true. So how could it be this father figure be different then?
Well, okay, so let's talk about this. Okay, so I had a little bit of issues with this here, right? So this is a dream, right? And, you know, I'm going to go back to, I realize it's not the same thing, but in Blade Runner, replicants are given dreams. That's part of like, mm-hmm. you know, and they're given dreams and they have all these fake pictures and stuff like that. And part of the replicants to show that they're replicants is the fact that they got tons and tons of pictures. Right. Yeah. It's just something that they have that for memories. So if she's having this dream, which is a metaphor type dream because she's not made out of wood.
Right.
Okay. So this is a metaphor type dream like that. That could be Maddox. Right. But even still, like, why would she be seeing him as a young person? Like, I don't get the impression that these were made young and grown up. Because when you look at Lal, she was made as a fully grown adult. Like, she was big. They don't, right? So maybe it's different because they're flesh and blood synths and stuff like that. Yeah. But, you know, even in like Battlestar Galactica with Cylons and in Blade Runner with the replicants and stuff, like, they don't grow. Even though they're flesh and blood synthetic beings, they don't grow up from a child. So, adding on to that, part of my problem is like, if this is just a metaphor dream, then why does her having this dream of these red moons and this lightning storm going to give them any proper valid information of any kind?
Yes. I was bothered that Rizzo just jumped on that as if it was actually useful.
I didn't think about that. I mean, so Narek talks earlier about how there's this thing, he mentions it, I don't even remember how he described it, auto heuristics that's, you know, trying to run things, and that it's kind of like bumping up against conflicts or things like that is his theory. And that this dream is a manifestation to try to let her know who she really is. So I took it that they took that as valid information because, I guess because this is something within her that's trying to tell the truth of who she really is, which is inside of her. But it's a good question. I hadn't actually thought about it, whether that's actually valid information.
I'm not thinking it won't pan out. It will pan out because that's how they're writing this. I'm just like, why would this completely metaphoric dream have any proper valid information whatsoever? Like, I don't know.
The constant electrical storm bothered me too. Why would she assume that that's a storm that's constant?
Yeah, that could, like, even if it was, it could just be one rainstorm. Like, we have rainstorms here on Earth all the time.
That's true. Although she has demonstrated before, she seems to know things she shouldn't. So I felt like it was this information that was coming up that she didn't know how she knew it, but she knew that there were constant storms or something like that.
Soji didn't say that it was constant. She just said that there was a storm. Narissa said constant storms.
Yeah. Well, Soji says was, I see two red moons, dark as blood, and lightning, so much lightning. And yeah, they did make an assumption that it's just like lightning all the time, but
it's constant.
Two red moons.
Yeah. One moon circles.
Yeah.
yeah.
So
nice.
All of this is going to be about a hydrogen atom. Okay. I did think, when Narek asked the question, why is she programmed to dream? The first thing that I thought of was
electric sheep.
Data.
Yes.
Well, that too.
The first thing that I thought of was Soong's dream program.
I thought about that
and
as well.
Is this intentional? If Maddox was using Soong's, what's the word I'm looking for? Model, I guess you could say. Not blueprints, but whatever. Then that could be something that is in there.
I have a reference that's helpful for this, though.
Yes. Okay, go ahead.
Because it made me think of Data's dreams in Birthright Part 1, which is an episode that I love. Mm-hmm. And there is a conversation, I think, toward the end between Data and Bashir, where, you know, Data's talking about the dreaming program and, you know, what it means and all of that. And then Bashir says, you know, this is just the kind of thing that might get me published in the Starfleet Cybernetics Journal. Would you mind if I authored a paper on this? And
yes.
Data says, of course not. So I assumed that Maddox just, like, read that in a journal. Like, oh, it can dream and has this function
quite
or whatever.
Possible.
But anyway.
I'm really disappointed that you didn't reference Phantasms as the dream episode that you love.
I love both of them, actually. I do genuinely love Phantasms because it's such a bizarre creation. But
with mint frosting.
Yeah.
But, and we got that wonderful meme about an android with unlimited data.
Right.
Yes.
I was thinking Birthright because it was like the first one where he's doing it. But yeah.
And he is having metaphorical dreams in that.
So that
does tend to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, it made me think of that. And I thought that was a cool connection because we've seen Data dreaming before. But okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One other thing I noticed, and I might be reading too much into this, but it seems like Narek's sister really, really hates him. You know, while she's also crawling in bed with him, but really, really hates him. And why? Why is this?
Because he's falling in love
with,
quote unquote,
an android.
Right.
And she hates
him. But androids. She seemed mad at him before. She seemed like she thought he was incompetent, that he, you know, she reluctantly allowed him to put it through his plan. So I'm wondering if we're going to find out that he was responsible for or didn't do something that then prompted the death of their brother.
Well, she did say to O that her best man was on it.
Well, that's true. But then again, she's trying to present, she's trying to have O not be concerned about it and get involved.
Could be, yep.
Something I noticed to put it out there.
Mm, okay.
See how it goes.
I just interpreted she was mad because of him falling in love with the synth.
I think that's. I mean, it may be that simple. Like I said, I might be overreading it.
But, yeah. So one thing, I just want to mention that I was thinking of it, like seeing in the dream and whatnot, but I had thoughts of Requiem for a Methuselah when they were doing the dream. So that's the TOS episode where they got the guy who's been living forever. He was Da Vinci and he made the blonde robot and whatnot. I don't know.
What made you think of that one in particular?
Just having the father be on the planet with Soji, this isolated planet.
Yeah. I could totally see that. I hadn't thought about that.
You know, because I read the books, you know, we had those data books by, I think it was Jeff Lang, right? With the...
And that did have that character, right?
Yeah, with the Data as Da Vinci's man on the cover. So, wanted to mention that I was thinking about that.
Oh, it's an interesting connection.
That's not Light Fantastic. That's the other one. Anyway.
Mortal Coil was the first one. And
thank you.
Mortal Coil.
It's Mortal Coil. Yeah,
that's it.
The Vitruvian
So this is stuff that I didn't really like too much in this. So when Soji's like, the Zal Mach, I thought it was taboo to non-Romulans. It is. That's all the more reason we should try it. What?
Why? Yes, I agree.
What?
He's making it seem like it's a kinky thing or something. Yeah.
No. No. Not that it's kinky. I'm not thinking.
No, so I was joking because it is a weird line. Like, I don't know what that's supposed to mean.
Why would this secret Romulan meditation being taboo to everybody who's not? Why would that be the reason they should try it? I don't know. Like,
because it can unlock things other things can't? I don't know. It's
okay.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
He's trying to convince her that he trusts her. And the first thing he does as soon as they walk into that a chapel, whatever it is, he tells
her
the
candle maze room. Also, it seems like Soji doesn't wear socks. She just has boots on her bare feet.
That's uncomfortable, but okay. Of course, it wouldn't necessarily be uncomfortable if you're an android. So, yeah. So I think that was just a trust thing.
I wasn't a big fan of this whole maze thing that they were doing too, because it was like, I don't know quite how to put it, but it was just like, it just seemed really silly to me because they're like, you know, he had all these terms and I wrote them all down except for one. That he didn't have a translation for, but he's like, oh, look where you are. You're at the closing now, and this happens when you get to the closing on this thing. Hmm. Look, now you're at the lifting of the eye. Look, and now you're learning all this stuff, and now you're at the unfolding, and you're understanding everything right at this time that you're supposed to be. Now you're at the center, and you're doing all this stuff that you should be doing right at this time. And I don't know, like, it just didn't work for me.
It worked for me really well. I like that a lot, actually, because I don't know. There's something I like about just putting together something that adds to a certain mythology or something that just like guides you through something. So I had a completely opposite reaction. I actually really liked it.
It's this mythology stuff for the Rhymelands that's not working for me. Huh. I'm thinking in this, and you know, like this box, like just to this box that he has, like it's supposed to be some other metaphor. Like it's supposed to be some weird metaphor with him and his sister. He's like, I have patience and you don't, so I can solve this box, and you're just mad and want to break the box. And isn't that like so deep? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, what are you trying to tell me with this thing?
Okay, the thing with the walking around and remembering things is yet another indicator that somebody on that staff is a classicist to me. And I had this down for the history portion, but I'll say it now.
Chrissy's History Corner.
One of the most famous Romans of the era of Julius Caesar is Marcus Tullius Cicero. Okay. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's had to take any Latin or deal with anything from that period, you have at least run into Cicero at some point. And one of the reasons for that is because his stuff was maintained through the Middle Ages, even though he wasn't Christian, because it was considered to be the most pure Latin that anybody could speak or write. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have his thoughts on everything. And part of the reason we have his thoughts on everything is because he had his secretary follow him around and write everything down that he said. Hmm. Okay. And the secretary's name is Tiro, and he invented shorthand, which nobody uses anymore, but I think that's cool. But the reason I bring this up is because Tiro tells us, and I don't remember, well, it's not actually Tiro that tells us, but it's in one of Cicero's works where he talks about his method for remembering his speeches. Mm. And what he would do was he'd have the text of his speech, and he would picture each portion in a part of his house. Yes. And then as he's making the speech, so that he doesn't have to have notes, he would walk around the area or the stage or whatever he was dealing with. And that would coincide with the places in his house. So, okay, so the opening part is on my desk. And then I walk over to this cabinet. And when I open the cabinet door, there's the second part of it. And so that, in terms of using that as a memory jogging thing, that I thought of that. Mm-hmm. Except for the fact that she didn't, like, consciously do that. But, you know,
I've actually heard about this method. I heard about it a different way, and they called it the memory palace, which is a way that people can remember things that are really kind of complicated. So, for example, just like a randomly shuffled deck of cards, and just somebody having a really brief time to like look through all 52 cards, and people have trained themselves to think of it like a house and all of these different rooms and all of these different symbols that will come across for like the numbers and, you know, the suits and all of that to remember it. It is actually like a real way to remember things.
And I don't know if Cicero was the first to come up with it. He would have said he was, even if he wasn't. So
but like what you're talking about though is somebody that trains themselves to remember something.
Understood. Yeah.
And she's just walking through this thing because he's telling her to do it, and he's saying, you're now at an important spot, so this is going to happen now.
Although again, somehow she knows things that she shouldn't about, you know, the Romulan ship that was there and some other things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like Maddox or whoever had loaded her with a bunch of Romulan stuff just in case it was needed, maybe. I don't know. But, okay, interesting. So a lot of the Romulan mythology building isn't working for you, Brandon, and it's working very well for me.
And I'm glad that it is working for you. Like, I don't want to take it away from you. Like, I'm glad that it's working for you. It's fine. Missing the mark for me, and that's fine.
It may come together at some point, and you'll go, oh, That works.
I don't hate the show. I don't hate the episode. It's like the episode's really good.
That's good.
I really enjoy the episode. So I have a really interesting question, I think, that it's there, but I don't think anybody's really asking this question. Who is Soji actually calling? Okay, so we know that this is like a program. It's the Mother AI program, right? But, you know, he's able to determine that she's calling the mom. I guess that could probably just be because of surveillance and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. But if these calls are lasting only 70 seconds, what's popping up in front of her?
I had that question as well, and I thought there were two possibilities. One possibility is she's not actually calling out to anybody because Maddox talks about embedded bomb AI like within her, and that Narek is just saying this in order to get her to figure out more stuff. The other possibility is that it actually calls out to some, I don't know, something, some subspace relay or something that Maddox had set up to like ping back the right information or something, and then it can show as a real transmission. One of those things.
Yeah. See, like, I remember back in, I don't remember what year it was, but you could, like, text a name to a phone number, right? And you would get this generated phone call from Samuel L. Jackson, you know, advertising the Snakes on a Plane movie, right? You could get, like, this, you could get Samuel Jackson to call you for the Snakes on the Plane promotion. So I'm thinking it's something like
so
that.
So it's like but she's I'm just, texting like, I'm just, her
mom. Yeah. That's fun.
She's just texting her mom. I was just wondering, because I'm like, we're seeing her talk to somebody like she would on a communications device.
Yeah.
But it's an embedded program. So is there actually a phone call happening? Is she just calling some server somewhere? And is that server on the parents, on the dad's planet or like whatever planet that is? If it is, why aren't they just tracing that? Or is she not actually calling anybody and it's all in her head, which I don't think because we
don't
seen
think
it.
So. And then maybe the embedded mom AI thing is like when you get a communication back with this figure saying these things, you go to sleep. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
70 seconds, man, that's a short phone call.
Yeah, short phone call.
I always figured it was in the phone or in the communications device.
Don't know.
Could be. Yeah, it could be. So she could have a special phone. You know, like those kids. Like when I was working at an electronics store, we had a little purple phone that you could sell for kids, right? So that no data phone or anything, and they would have four numbers on it, and you would program it there. Number one would be for mom. Mm-hmm. Number two would be for grandpa, right? And you would pre-program the kids. You'd just push them. So maybe she's just got one of those, and she just pushes one for mom.
The mom button. She has the mom button and the dodge button, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could be a regular device that they just put an extra, you know, piece of information into an extra program.
But, right. And then just one last thing. I'm just throwing out little notes that I had. So, again, with this Romulan stuff not working for me is like, so Narek's true name is Hrayan.
Yeah.
Again, why, like, what? Yeah, we get it. They're secretive. Why do we need another thing?
Well, but
because he loves her. That's right. But he told her his true name.
The true name thing, doesn't that kind of have its origins to the Enterprise incident when the Romulan commander there is talking about, like, you know, another name that they have that they can only really, it's implied, I think, speak to someone that they're close to. I thought it was a connection to that.
Then I'll have to rewatch that and I'll stand corrected on that because I'm like, what is this?
Well, okay. So, and I actually brought up, because I was curious about it, I have the dialogue from the Enterprise incident. So in that, Spock was saying, I forget what they were talking about. They were talking about whether something will work at this moment or an hour from now. Like, would it not, Commander? And she says, yes, yes, it will, Mr. Spock. You do know I have a first name. I was beginning to wonder. Well, I do. Would you like to hear it? And she whispers it in his ear. And Spock says, how rare and how beautiful, but so incongruous when spoken by a soldier. So they had like this starting to love affair thing. So I think they're just kind of fleshing that out here as that is the kind of thing that you tell this special name to someone that you love.
Or but that you've crawled into bed with.
Okay, so if that's what she said, then I'm not thinking that's the same thing because they're like, your Romulans are secret. If you've got your name, you got your name for your family, and you've got your secret name for yourself that you only tell your deeply loved ones. So, like, they've got three names now, and I don't know. Like, yeah, we get it. We get it. They're secretive.
I don't know if it's secretive. I think it's more presenting like a different face or a different persona to different people, which we actually do in our own lives, right? Like, you're going to be different with a spouse versus a kid versus a parent versus a friend. You know, like, we all have these different faces that we give to people. I feel like they're just kind of formalizing that. Mm-hmm. But anyway. Yeah. Okay.
That's all I got. I'm not going to harp on it anymore. I'm sure there's people who love this stuff. And I don't want to take it away from you.
All right. Well, shall we talk about the storylines coming together?
Yeah, coming together toward the end.
All right. So what do we think about that?
Exciting.
Yes.
It was quite pleasurable. And I say that But no, I love that toward the end they have this reference, listeners may be aware of, to this spatial trajector, which is in Voyager's Prime Factors, which is not a good episode overall, but it does have this cool thing that can send you 40,000 light years away, which, by the way, Soji knows it's 40,000 light years and knows about this technology, which is interesting. But yeah, I really like that things kind of like come together. You finally see, you know, Soji who escapes with Picard through this spatial trajector, and then Hugh and Elnor are there to kind of help them make their escape. I just loved it, and it made me really look forward to it, because it's like we've been following this thing on the cube and now we're going to be somewhere else, right? Which is great.
Nepenthe.
So Nepenthe, yeah. Yeah. Place of sorrows, or forgetting your sorrows. Is that what it was, Chrissy?
Yeah, forgetting in general, I think.
Forgetting in general. Sorrows, yeah. So I really like how it came together, and I've been looking forward to that. But
yeah.
I know that you didn't have a problem with it because I saw your post at the Babel conference, but I did, and a lot of other people did, and both my wife and Aubrey are like, why didn't he just jump through the portal with him? There was plenty of time.
Yes.
So, like, they stalled a long time at that thing at the end, and he could have gone. Like, I don't know. Okay, I know that you didn't have a problem with it because you posted it in a comment on the thread, but I'm like, to have him stay behind doesn't,
I didn't question it at all at the time that it was happening. And then when, you know, you and other people were raising this concern, I was thinking about it and I was like, I think it needs more time, but regardless, even if it doesn't need more time, they would probably know that Hugh has been helping with this and needs to be defended as well. And Hugh is an important person to Picard. For me, it made complete sense for him to stay behind and to ensure those things. So I was actually surprised to see that there was a concern, because that concern didn't pop into my head at all in two watches.
Yeah. They could have fixed that by just having somebody banging down the door. You know,
I got the sense they were close by. And I think it was going to still take some time for this thing to shut down and get hidden or whatever. So it worked for me. I felt like they needed to stall for that time, and he needed to defend Hugh as well and make sure nobody got through this trajector. It's so interesting, because for me, it like completely worked both times and I had like no concern. And then I saw that and I was like, oh, let me think about it, I guess. But it's just so interesting, like the different ways that we see things sometimes.
Yeah.
But just like that aside, like, what do you think about, Brandon, about like what's happening, and now Picard and Soji are going somewhere else, and the La Sirena is going to have to kind of meet up with them? Like,
I think that's interesting, because like you said, so this is a reference to Prime Factors. I love this world building. I love these references, and it's really great to see references to even not fan favorite stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So I do like seeing that a lot. And I didn't catch the reference immediately. I'm like, that's going to be a reference that I'm going to have to look up. And before I had a chance to look up, people were started to pop up what it is. So I didn't catch what it was right off the bat. But I love that it's there. And again, like, this is Kirsten Byers' influence, because she knows the Voyager universe so well. Right. I'm sure that we're going to get a Vardwar reference at some point in this. Right. So
that would be cool. But, yeah, we're definitely getting a lot of Voyager references.
Yeah, which is really cool. It's fantastic, because Voyager was never really involved in our Prime Universe continuity, because it was off doing its own thing, right? So it's nice
with a few exceptions, like the Pathfinder project.
A few little ones, right?
But for the most part, it was off somewhere else, not interacting with what was going on with TNG and DS9,
Right. So it's wonderful to catch these references that are showing up to be so important. I love it.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about the spatial the connections.
That's so funny thing. Because but, like as soon as I heard spatial trajectory, I was like, I know what episode that's from. It just made an impression, I guess.
Well, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I thought it was going to be an Iconian gateway.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then they said spatial trajectory, and I was like, okay, so it's not Iconian. Anyway. And then I saw the stuff about the prime factors.
All it was right. very pleasurable to get that reference.
It was.
Quite pleasurable.
Made me want to have some pecan pie.
Yeah. And I can sell you my database of stories.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, in this scene, there was a subtitle for a line that was not said.
I noticed that.
So this was mind-boggling to me. So when I watch it in the morning, so it's not loud. I didn't notice it the first time I watched it, but I watch it with subtitles, so it's not too loud. But I watched the episodes four times before we record, and when I was watching it today, right after Elnor says, "You came so far, they'll destroy her, Picard. Now go."
Right.
Mm-hmm. Picard doesn't say anything, and there's a subtitle that says, "I'll find you again."
Yeah, and mm-hmm. Picard doesn't speak it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, that's fascinating.
Okay. Here's another interesting thing. So like, I don't know if that was like a line that they had to like cut at the last minute or what, but speaking of things getting cut, I don't know if you guys saw, but you know, like each week, a couple days before the episode comes out, CBS releases, I don't know, 8-10 pictures or something that are coming up in the episode. And there was one they released that was not even in the episode. Right.
Oh,
it was one. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it's on La Sirena. It's Raffi and she has her arms crossed. And so does one of the holograms, like a hologram we haven't seen before. So it's like, is that like a cut scene or something? Anyway, so that was another thing where it was like the cut line and the cut image. It's just interesting how these things work. But like, Brandon, I saw that and I was like, did I like not hear Picard say that? And I had to go back and I was like,
three times.
He didn't say it.
Yeah.
What
happened?
Totally. Yeah. That was such an interesting moment. Yeah. The things you get on the closed captioning, you know, listeners, if you're able to do it at least once, you should do it because you pick up interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Now, with these Borg here, I did have a kind of a interesting question that I don't know. It really popped up and it really stood out for me in this episode. I don't know what you guys think about it, but why are all these Borg so scarred up? Okay, so like Picard is a former Borg with implants removed. Seven is a former Borg with a bunch of implants removed. Seven has an artificial eye.
Yes.
Right. So they like she had an implant and they had to take it out. And then the doctor created an artificial eye for her.
Mm-hmm. He was very proud of his work. Yeah.
He's very proud of his work. So like, why are there Borg here with like dead eye sockets?
Okay. So I think there are a couple of things. I think the first thing is for Picard, he was only assimilated for like a couple of days. So it makes sense to me. You wouldn't see anything on the outside. Right.
Yeah.
Now, you bring up a good case, which is Seven, who is a Borg for, you know, some decades, and pretty much the manifestation you see is the thing above her right eyebrow, and then she has, you know, the starburst thing on the cheek, and then she's got the stuff on, like, her left hand, I think it is. So, yeah, it's a lot less, and so that made me think the doctor on Voyager may have had the expertise and resources to be able to do what he did. But on this Borg cube, I think they may not have as much in terms of expertise or resources, and they may be doing these things a little bit quicker because of the scale that they're working with. That's the only thing I can think of because, yeah, it's not as complete of a job even as you have with Seven, right?
I think it's intentional. I think they're doing that as a way of reminding themselves of what they had been, you know, and this is
like Martok
important. Yes. Like Martok. Yeah.
I don't think they really have a choice because it sounds like they're in stasis and then they take these out and then they wake them up. I don't think they get a choice about it.
True.
I got the sense that this is just the best they could do with the resources they have available. So like they can function, but there's a lot of scarring and a lot of things that aren't as neat and tidy as maybe they could be. Yeah. It's a good question, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I assumed it was that. Right. So, anything else about the storylines coming together before we get into our favorite connections with other things.
I have one more thing to bring up, but not about that.
Oh.
Go ahead.
So if
sure,
if
or about anything, yeah. That, yeah.
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 Okay, so this goes back to my... I tweeted this out today. So this goes back to my theory that Rios is a hologram.
Okay. Tell us about the next evolution of this theory.
So right at the beginning, with Girardi and Rios, when he's playing soccer, right, and she comes up to him, where's Rios' shoulder injury? The shoulder injury mm-hmm. that he refused the dermal regenerator for?
Oh, did he not have that?
He didn't have it on his shoulder at all. And, I mean, so when I posted that, the first thing that people were like, dermal regenerator. And I'm like, no, he specifically refused it. They specifically called it out. And if you look at him with no shirt on, he is covered in scars. So him refusing a dermal regenerator is a common thing.
Huh.
Right? And it's only been 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay, so that thing would not have healed on its own. So in my head thing, right? So this is how it fits. People are like, this doesn't make any sense because he beamed down to a planet. How can he beam down to a planet? And I'm like,
the doctor beamed down?
He had a mobile emitter, and they're like, where's the mobile emitter? I'm like, well, in my thought process, I don't think that Rios realizes he's a hologram. Oh. He might. Okay, but I don't think that he
Rios is activated.
So he could he could have an internal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
He could be an advanced hologram where he's got a holographic mobile emitter, right? I don't know. Like, technology is advanced. Look at these computers and whatnot. So, like, to me, that wasn't even a major concern at all, the fact that he's beamed down to a planet. But so again, I think that this is going to boil down to that dead captain that he had.
Yeah,
he died at that time as well, or he was able to be saved and they uploaded his consciousness to a hologram. And it was built on his body, which had the previous scars on it, right? So like that's where those previous scars have all come from.
I think this is it's really interesting, and I haven't really seen anybody else talking about it besides you. So
I'm the only one, and most everybody's telling
and
me
they're like,
nuts,
nah, so nah.
I'm probably wrong.
I think it's possible. I'll say it's a possibility. Yeah.
And like the reason why as well is like I think that would be extremely fascinating because I think the ultimate end game of this season is going to be what is the difference / lack of difference, no difference at all, between artificial life and real life? I think that's where the end game of this season is going. I've thought that for a while. And if you have a character that doesn't realize, and, you know, it's not that ridiculous to think we have a hologram that doesn't realize he's a hologram when we've got two synthetic androids that don't realize they're synthetic androids. Right? So, like, I don't know. I might be looking into this way too much, but I think this really makes sense to me.
I think it does make a lot of sense, and we'll have to see what, you know, prize we can give you if you're right, because that would be impressive.
I want a drink with two umbrellas in it.
Two umbrellas? There you go. You sure you don't want three?
No, two's enough.
Only
two's enough, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's great, yeah.
Yeah, that's anyways, that's my wonderful little theory. So that's all I've got.
Okay.
All right. There was one thing that didn't really fit in to talk about anywhere else, but that I thought of. Hugh makes a point of talking about how Picard could be advocating for the XBs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about Whoopi Goldberg's going to be in the next season.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe season two is going to be about Picard and Guinan advocating for the XBs to be integrated into Federation society and hijinks ensue or something. But just in thought that I had. Interesting.
Well, I mean, they could make an argument for XBs and synths and holograms fully integrating into Federation society, right?
Even better.
Because there are like those three strains of outsiders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So as excited as I am for Guinan, as excited as I am for Whoopi Goldberg coming, I don't expect her to be in more than one or two episodes at most.
Well.
You know, like I just picture like a slight cameo. I'm not picturing her being, if they do another 10 episode season, I would not expect her to be in like, most
I don't know.
Of the episodes.
I think we're going to get more of Seven. I wouldn't have expected to have seen her in more than one or two, but I think there's going to, we'll see. I think it might be more than just a cameo because they're bringing her in for some story reason, but
I would love to have a series called Star Trek Guinan.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
That'd be awesome.
Anywho.
Yeah.
But I hope I'm wrong. I would love to see more of her. I just don't think that we will. So
we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, favorite canon and books and comics connections.
As usual, I have a bit of a list. But
okay, then I'll go first because I'll just do the one. So okay. I caught it on the first viewing. I loved the Flotter lunchbox.
Yeah, Flotter.
Top nice of my Voyager list
reference.
Too.
It was a great reference. It was a perfect reference. Like, as much as I don't like Once Upon a Time, right? I don't like the episode very much. I think it's a great reference.
It is a great reference. The Adventures of Flotter. Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
All right.
So should I go through what I have?
Yeah.
We already mentioned some of them. So I will go through. Oh, I guess I just wanted to mention one thing. One of the reviewers, I think Jim Morehouse on TrekCore, pointed out that technically what Rios is playing is not like what we would call soccer or football, but something called futsal, which is kind of a different soccer type thing played on an indoor hardwood surface. And he's kind of playing on a hardwood surface. Anyway, small thing.
Okay. I just thought he was messing around with a ball.
It's the same type of ball, apparently.
Oh, yeah. For this
sport,
yeah.
But, okay. So, Rios makes a mention of Latinum. I don't know if that's the first Latinum reference we've had, but that was cool. So I'm getting a lot of these from the TrekCore review, but
when
Soji uses his hand scanner, I think they were speculating it might use quantum dating, which is something that was first introduced in Enterprise's The Expanse. Mm-hmm. And then when Picard is doing research into the artifact and there's all like the images that go by, I think one of them is the Enterprise E in First Contact. Another one that happens quickly is the Romulan Continuing Committee from Inner Arma Anim Silent Legis, with all the Romulans kind of meeting together. So that was kind of a cool reference. I think there's a view of the Palais de la Concorde, which is part of the Federation capital from Paradise Lost. One thing we really didn't talk about much is Picard has all of these flashbacks from like his post-traumatic stress, which was actually really powerful. But like, there was a bunch of stuff that went by. I think a lot of it was from First Contact. I think I saw something from the Borg Queen. Yeah. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was there, which was cool. And I guess that's about it. But yeah, there were, I think, a bunch of like little references in there, and I like how they're continuing to do that. Oh, another thing that was kind of, I guess, amusing was this Emmy, this Starfleet captain that Raffi's talking about the Romulans being in a 250-year bad mood. And I was like, 250 years. Okay, that's right before the Romulan War. So that's cool. So that was a nice kind of callback to that time period as well. So
that's good.
That's it. A lot of fun references.
All right. Those are all good. I got two here. I got, first of all, or I should say two that weren't already mentioned. The idea of the Borg as victims connects with how and why they come into being in the Destiny trilogy. And I'll just leave it at that. People who have read Destiny know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't read it, go read it as soon as you're done listening to us.
You should read it. It doesn't matter that what's in Picard contradicts it. It's an amazing trilogy.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. You should
read regardless and think of as an alternate timeline.
And it is available, at least electronically, as an omnibus edition.
Yeah.
That's a little cheaper. So if
you can get
that,
the omnibus in like the physical, you can get a used copy of that. That's how I got it. And it costs like $5 for three books or something. So
that's cheaper than the electronic one. So,
You know, one of the best moments in my fandom here on Trek FM is recently I got to do a discussion with David Mack over on Melodic Treks. And we talked about the music that he chose to inspire him to write the Vanguard series. And I got to tell him there, I'm like, you know, I just want to thank you for all that you and your fellow authors have brought to the Star Trek franchise. And while we may be getting new adventures that mean that these aren't canon anymore, like, because to me they were loose canon, right? Because that's all that we had. I said these books will always be a part of my fandom because they're such great stories. You know, and there are elements that you can bring in. I mean, there's contradictions all over Star Trek that it doesn't matter to me if there's a contradiction.
It doesn't matter if it's a great story, I don't care if there's a contradiction or, you know, it doesn't fit with something else. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm glad you got to do that. I still haven't listened to that episode because I haven't finished the Vanguard novels
yet. Yeah, hurry up. We're crying out loud.
I've had other things I'm reading. I read five of the out of the nine, so I'm getting there. Anyway.
All right. Takes time. The other one that I have is, I think, maybe a bit of a deep cut.
Okay.
So I'm kind of surprised nobody else has brought it up. I haven't seen it anywhere online either. Everybody noticed that the synth on the table in Soji's dream is wooden, right?
Yes.
And when we are first introduced to Data, what does Riker call him?
Pinocchio. Actually, Pinocchio. I did actually see in the, I think in the Trek movie review, they made a reference there.
Oh, well.
But still,
I thought I was ahead of things.
I mean, you may have noticed it before they did. But no, I totally didn't think about that with tying to Pinocchio. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Until I saw it in the review and you mentioned it. It's a good one.
So that was, I thought that was cool. But that's it for my connections. So.
He also refers to him as Pinocchio in The Measure of a Man.
Pinocchio's strings have been cut. Yep.
Pinocchio's, So I think that's why, I think that's probably why the figure was wooden as opposed to anything else.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, there were a couple of historical things that popped into my head when we were looking at this. I already mentioned the one. Another one is looking at the, was it Zalmak? Is that, that's,
I think
the
Zalmak or something like
Zalmak,
that.
Zalmak, okay. Yeah. It's a walking meditative practice when it's not being used to manipulate somebody's memories, or at least it seems like it is. And so that shows up in a few different cultures. And the two that came to mind right off the bat that people would know about is first the Nazca Lines. You guys know about the Nazca Lines, those huge. So it's down in South America. There's these massive drawings of various animals and things. And this is going to intersect with my ancient alien talking about that. Because people say, well, it's a giant picture of a bird. And how could you know that it's a bird unless you're looking at it from above? And so, of course, that means that the aliens took the people from South America and that's how they were doing that. But actual anthropologists and archaeologists who study these things say that those are for walking meditation. So you start along the path and you walk along it and you're saying whatever prayers or you're thinking about whatever it is that you're supposed to be thinking about with that. And it's meditative. The other thing that came to mind, and maybe because Wednesday was Ash Wednesday, and I was raised Catholic, even though I'm not anymore, but is the Stations of the Cross, which is another. It's a movement meditative practice if it's done. I don't want to say the way it's supposed to be, but not, it's not always set up that way. But I remember as a child when you went to the Stations of the Cross before, it would be usually like Easter, Holy Thursday, you'd do that. It was all set up around the chapel at the church where we went, and you went from one to another, to another, to another, and you went through the whole process of, Christ's trial and execution and up to the resurrection. So.
Yeah.
So walking meditation.
I can totally see that. And maybe related a little bit to that, I actually went, I know it's usually like at the church, at like the different parts inside the church, but there's a place, I forget what it was called, but in Portland, Oregon, where this, I think, I forget what it is, like the archdiocese there or something, like has this plot of land. And so there's like a lot of forest around it, and they actually do the Stations of the Cross like in the forest. And so it's
that
like
would
this
be wonderful.
Long, it was very, very interesting just to see, and they put a lot of attention into it. But yeah, like there is like this whole tradition of this walking meditation that fits into that. I love that. Yeah.
Cool. The other thing, and actually again, this is, I can credit my husband Jason with having caused me to think of this. So the reclaimed Borg are, they're refugees. Okay. We can certainly see them as that, but they're stuck in this place because they're not yet at a point where they can be reintegrated into the rest of society for whatever reason. The reason doesn't matter.
Seems like it, yeah.
And this is exactly what happened when, the concentration camps were liberated at the end of World War II. You have all of these people who are in this place and there's nowhere else to take them. They need to at least recover to some extent from what they have gone through. And they ended up having to keep them there. So this is the, just like Hugh says, this is the last place we'd want to be, but there's nowhere else for us right now. And that was troublesome to a lot of people, both, the former prisoners in the concentration camps and the soldiers who had liberated them, because they wanted to, you know, just metaphorically embrace them and take them out of this terrible place, and they couldn't do it. So made me think of that too.
Cool.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. So that's that. All right. So, any final thoughts on this that we have not covered at one point or another?
I'm spent.
Yeah. I mean, of course mine is loved it. Looking forward to next week. I know we've started like not talking about the preview, but man, I'm really looking forward to next week, but I'm not going to say why.
Well, the one thing they've already said, right, is it's known who's going to be on next week, or have they not said that outside of the preview?
I don't know if they've really said that outside of the preview, but
okay,
it's going to be cool.
Well, I'll say this, because my mother was not aware that these people were either going to be even going to be in the show.
Yeah.
And so we were sitting at the table and the episode was over and it just started up the preview, and I was kind of not paying attention to it. And my mother goes, oh my God, they're in this.
Nice.
So that was really cool.
That's
and then she had
reaction.
To rewind it and watch the preview again. So,
yeah, I loved it too. I thought it was a really good episode. I mean, like, I'm pissing and moaning about the Romulan lore not working for me here, but I really liked this episode a lot. I thought it was really great, and it really catapulted the story forward, and it came right at a great time, so I love it.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to when I can sit down and watch all of them
together,
you know, binge it, and then be like, oh, I missed that, and there was that, and we'll talk about it. All right. Well, it has been a lot of fun talking about The Impossible Box today, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm. To the journey!
If I were writing Voyager right now, like reconceiving it, I would make each season like a different decade, like show the progression of time over 70 years.
See, we could have just done that with Kes as a character, though. I know I said it probably a million times in the last five episodes. Kes could have shown us what that would have been within the seven-year period. So, you know, we all know my opinions on Kes and how much I liked the character.
Earl Grey.
Okay, Amy, your ice pick.
What is that number?
Amy to the nth power pick.
I imagine it at the square root of minus one.
Negative one, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
literary tricks.
You know, there's all this backstory as you're starting to learn in the show about what happened between Nemesis and the Picard show. And so there was all this backstory. You couldn't really show it all in the show. You don't want to. The show's about what's going on in the present time of the show. But, you know, Star Trek, since its origin, has always had ancillary materials that flesh out these stories. So, and we knew that would be the case here.
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
99% of the time Star Trek tech makes sense. This does not to me.
Okay, Christy, like, Star Trek has asked me to believe some pretty ludicrous things. This takes the cake.
Okay.
I think so.
All right, we're on the same page.
This is completely...
More than going warp 10 turns you into lizard?
More than lizard babies.
Really?
More than Spot turning into a baby lizard. This, I'm just like, what are you trying to feed me here?
That's interesting, because I believe this a lot more than those other things.
But. Yeah. Brandon Baga's evolution theories are much more believable than this.
No, they're really not. But yeah.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or on the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others to find the show. And we've got two new reviews.
Woohoo.
Ooh.
So Rob Vaughn says, well done, gives us a 5-star review and says, keep it up, guys. Love this podcast.
Well, thank you.
Our other review came from SJ Sharks Fan 39. And this is a 4-star review, and it's called Podcast is Great, but Does It Need to Be 2 Hours? I've been enjoying the line quite a bit, as I feel all of the Picard podcasts that I listen to, this is the one that really delves into the details of the episodes and had a serious but casual discussion on the topics and issues that each episode raises. I love the chemistry of the hosts, and I love how dedicated they all are to this podcast. Justin brings a certain analytical quality to the show. Brandon brings passion and a little bit of critical need, so we can hear both positive and negative. And I really enjoy the historical context that Chrissy brings with each episode. On this current one, talking about episode 5, I love the new history segment because I think it is important for the issues that Picard does bring up. However, the show only gets 4 stars for one reason. The length of each episode is getting to be a little long. Again, it's nothing against the dedication, but I wonder if the episodes could be cut by like 20 minutes and you could still get everything that is said in each episode. I think one way to do this is to merge the predictions and comments and concerns into the main meat of the show. It might make the conversation flow better, and I've noticed that once we get to the prediction portion of the show, things have already been said that you don't need to repeat it. Other than that, I really do enjoy this companion piece to Star Trek Picard, and it's allowing me to think about each episode some more. I'm looking forward to finishing the season with this podcast and what is to come in the future. Well, thank you so much, SJ Sharks fan.
Yes.
And we have actually talked. We always talk behind the scenes. We're like, oh my goodness, we're doing this again. We're going this long. I think we've got a natural flow, and the episode lengths are what they kind of need to be for all the discussion that we have.
Yeah.
Once the season is done, I know that we're going to be dropping this down to an hour at most. An hour.
Yes.
When I pulled Justin and Chrissy on the show with me, I'm like, okay, guys, I don't want this thing to be over an hour. I don't like listening to podcasts that are over an hour long. In fact, as soon as I get an episode that's over an hour on my queue, I put it straight to the bottom. So I know exactly what you're
Please
saying.
Please, listeners, don't put us straight to the bottom like Brandon
does.
No, don't. But no, like, and the funny thing is, SJ Sharks fan, if you're listening, so we had a discussion about this and we're like, let's keep it under 2 hours. Let's, you know, take their advice and merge the predictions and questions and concerns, which we did.
And then we had a 30-minute review to read.
Still, well, it's not their fault. It's still going to be about 2 hours. So sorry about that. That does appear to be the length when we're reviewing the episodes. But as Brandon said, between seasons, we expect it to be more like an hour to do certain wrap up analysis, interviews, things like that. So bear with us.
I know who SJ Sharks fan is.
I think I know who you're talking about as well.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, Greg. Anyway, okay. We love you. So if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
And be sure to check out our Picard coverage throughout the week. Commentary will be available as tracks on the line. Feedback will be discussed on postcards on the line. And you can catch the full analysis right here on the main show. You'll find all of these in the feed for the line and the Trek FM master feed.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where Christopher D. Littlefield will collect your feedback for postcards on the line. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the line. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Chrissy, where can people contact you when you're not discovering that you're only 37 months old?
I was surprised they didn't do 47, but that's another...
They've been studiously avoiding any explicit 47 references.
That's true.
I think there are some like deep ones in there that people are finding, but there's nothing like that's obvious. So,
All right, well...
Basically, at the end of it, it's like, it kind of felt like at the later years of Star Trek, it would be like one of the characters would just turn and look at the camera and be like, 47. And then turn back and do what they were doing.
I love it. Okay.
Yeah. It's fun. If it's done right, it's fun. All right. So, in addition, here on the line, you can find me in 47 other places. I do occasionally get into the Babel conference, not as much as I'd like to, but I am there. I'm on Twitter at The Goddess Livia. That's TheGoddessLivia. And you can also follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page my fellow historian partner and I run, History with the Zilagis, and that's spelled S-Z-I-L-A-G-Y-I-S. And we post there about our historical research. My husband's been finding some really fun historical memes. So if you like memes, those are there. And also there's the blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I've been going episode by episode debunking the History Channel series. So, Brandon, where can people contact you when you're not trying to open impossible boxes?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with my friends Chris and Tom. We have a show called Good Evening and Alfred Hitchcock Podcast, which is all about Hitch's films. We do them in chronological order, one at a time. And you can also find me over on the United Federation of Podcast Network with my friend Zach. We have a show called Franchise Fatigue, and it's all about movies, remakes, and sequels. And coming up very shortly will be our episode on Creepshow 3, which is a whole heck of a lot of fun, even though the movie is not.
That's the important thing. Have fun whether the content's good or not.
Yes.
Justin, where can people find you when you're not trying to hold back Captain Picard from falling off the edge of a very dangerously and poorly created ledge?
Yes.
It was efficient because they didn't need all of like the to build stuff in this empty space if you just needed to. Anyway, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Unsafe. Unsafe.
Unsafe. For sure.
OSHA's over there. Just no. Yeah,
the Borg are one big OSHA hazard. Okay, in a lot of ways. well, you can find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting Earl Grey. That's our dedicated Next Generation podcast. I do that every week with my friends Amy Nelson and Joe Keegan. You can also find me on Twitter at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek and rarely about 47 references somehow. You can also find me hanging around Babel Conference on Facebook.
When he did that scene, I was totally thinking of that joke from the Family Guy Star Wars episode where they're like the two guys that are standing right beside the Death Star's ray and they just cut to them and they're like, yes. Like, I think it's from that. It might have just been another cutaway, but they're like, sorry. All I want is a railing. Is that too much to ask? Just a railing?
You know. Giant ships are very dramatic. Okay, well, if you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producer, Norman Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line.
So join us next time for another episode of The Line, where we'll be talking about the next Picard episode, Nepenthe.
I don't know what you're doing here, but I'll help you any way I can.
It's possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness, that is life.
Chrissy, earlier you had called the Borg refugees?
Yeah.
Strumming my pain with his fingers. Nice. Singing my laugh with his words. Killing me softly with his song. Killing me softly with his song.
Yes, I know they're really just called the Fugees.
I thought you were going to go Tom Petty there. All right.